They are innovators, visionaries, people pushing themselves, moving us all forward. They are architects, artists, teachers, builders, designers, dreamers, and doers. They are change makers at USGBC. Welcome to Changemakers at USGBC. I'm Rakesh Samarasekara, and this is the unstoppable Stephen Ritz.
Every day, my kids line up, and they line up to come to school, and they wait and wait and wait and can't get there. And you know what happens after while they're in school? Six blocks away on Webster Avenue, their grandparent, their parent, or their foster care worker is lining up at a soup kitchen or a food shelter. We've got to do something better. After school, my kids look at this, the 99-cent menu and bulletproof bodegas with chemical madness and no relationships sit there and stalk my kids. It's madness. So damn it, I'm not willing to accept the things I can't change anymore. I'm going to change the things I can't accept, and I'm here today asking for your support. Thank you. Thank you. And I'm here to tell you, eating a bag of Skittles is not eating across the rainbow. Healthy food is. And that's what these kids need. And if you expand their palates, you expand their minds. And we expand the possibilities so that we can grow something greater. And I'll tell you this, when I tell the kids to be quiet, the plants are having sex. I can get a pin drop. But most importantly, I'm thrilled to see kids pollinating plants instead of each other. That's what this movement is about. But let's talk data. We have gone from 40% attendance to 93% attendance. We target is kids. 100% of my kids who finish the program go on to post-secondary opportunities or a living wage job. But I've said one thing, and I'll go to my grave singing it. It is easier to raise healthy children than fix broken men, damn it. And that's what we need to do. That needs to be the voice of this movement.
You were listening to parts of his talk from TEDx Manhattan. Known as America's favorite teacher, Stephen believes that students shouldn't have to leave their community to live, learn, and earn in a better one. I had the wonderful opportunity to sit down with this inexorable force. Stephen had so much to say with lots of quotable moments along the way. We talked about what it's like to be a startup founder in his 50s, creating a business and life you love, preventing overwhelm, overcoming adversity, how to be a change maker, personal sustainability, and he said something that just shocked me. This show is a bit longer than usual, but it's full of insight, and it's our season finale. Stephen Ritz epitomizes what Changemakers at USGBC is all about.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm doing great, how are you?
I'm excited, I get to talk to you.
I'm so glad you're in Las Vegas, my old hometown. 15 years.
Oh, it's an amazing, it's inspiring here. I think the potential here is absolutely unlimited.
But isn't
that
it?
That would be a whole nother.
Yeah, that would just be another show.
All I want to say is what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but imagine a city that imports more food than the entire state of Hawaii. What grows in Vegas stays in Vegas. Kids, food, jobs, and schools. And that's what this is about.
Wow. Okay, let's start. What was the last thing that just made you laugh out loud?
I have a dear friend here, Rick Passo, in Las Vegas.
Rick is like one of my close friends from Vegas.
Right. Rick is an amazing whirlwind of social media. And we joke, we say, we hate being bipolar. It's awesome. You know, we hate mental illness. It's awesome. You know, this kind of like manic insanity that keeps us going and drives us ever forward. So the big joke is we saw a T-shirt that says, I hate being bipolar. It's awesome. It really made us laugh. Rick Passo is a local hero, and I love celebrating local heroes.
I'm so delighted that you mentioned him. And I know when Rick hears this, he's just going to love it. Stephen, you're a phenomenal speaker. You speak with such enthusiasm, eloquence, and urgency that people can't help but listen. TED.com says this: a whirlwind of energy and ideas, Stephen Ritz is a teacher in New York's tough South Bronx, where he and his kids grow lush gardens for food, greenery, and jobs. just try to keep up with this New York treasure as he spins through the many ways there are to grow hope in a neighborhood many have written off. You're so enthusiastic and eloquent. Where does that come from?
I just think it's passion. You know, I all believe that we have this innate ability to leave the world better than we found it, each and every one of us, not just me. I like to be eloquent and elegant in regard to nature and nurture, and I think that's reflective in my speaking and my attitude. Mm. But, you know, I never woke up expecting to be Stephen Ritz. I just was someone who wanted to make a difference.
Yeah, public speaking obviously is such a thing these days. Just from your experience, what's one thing someone can do to be a better speaker?
Be authentic. I think people respond to the real. Mm. So I think if you come out there and you know your story and you're telling it with a sense of confidence and a sense of urgency, that's the most meaningful thing that you can do. That's really the most meaningful thing. I'm sure there are a lot of things. I mean, people say I have way too many slides. I think at times I don't have enough slides.
Yeah.
I tend to script myself. And then what happens is I spend a lot of time scripting myself and tend to go off script because I so involve and so appreciate the audience. Sometimes I'm up there and, you know, I get misty eyed that people are actually paying attention to me. So keep your focus, bring your A game, but keep it real.
Keep it real. What I most love about you, your story is you started where you were at. I mean, you literally started where you started. You were born in the Bronx and you've been living in the Bronx. And just to put this into perspective, you know, for everyone that's listening, your kids, your students are from the poorest congressional district in the country. Most people would go where the grass is greener, but not you. You stayed. It wasn't about changing the world. It was about your classroom, changing your classroom. Why did you do what you've done, where you've done it? Why not leave like everyone else who does and who can?
I just have this fundamental belief that people should not have to leave their neighborhood to live, learn, and earn in a better one. And if I'm going to put a stake in the ground, I might as well put it where I live and really make a difference. Now, above and beyond that, I really believe in the multiplier effect. So that when you moved children from my community out of poverty into spheres of success that they've never imagined, well, not only are they benefiting, but the whole world is benefiting. And the one thing that I found is that my children are poised, ready, willing, and able to export their talent and diversity in ways that people have never imagined. And that's a beautiful thing. And if I can, everybody else can. So for me, it's a win-win-win paradigm.
I gotta remind people that we're taping this at 6 a.m., okay? Stephen wanted to do it at 5, but this is the kind of energy that this man wakes up with. And you haven't even gone to sleep.
No, I'm still up. You're I haven't gone to bed yet.
Hasn't no, even gone to bed, and it's 6 a.m. Okay. You're now of TED fame. You know, you're known as America's favorite teacher. People, they know you. Do you get stopped on the street? Do people recognize you?
Sometimes, yes, that's really rather remarkable. I mean, that is, I guess, the power of TED or some of the TV spots that I've been fortunate enough to do. So that's a little unnerving, but if it's a possibility of doing something great and growing something greater and making it a teachable moment, that's wonderful. Mm. That's absolutely wonderful. It was really cool coming through customs on coming back from, where was I, in Dubai. And at immigration, I was so nervous. You're always so nervous. You never know, like, what's going to happen. You just can't wait to get out. And the guy looks at me and goes, great TED Talk, dude. that's kind of cool. You know, it's been a blessing. But most importantly, you know, my favorite place to be recognized is on the block, in my classroom, in my school, in my community, and being an available, accessible resource. And that's what I think people need, available, accessible resources. This movement is about one thing. It is about love. I'm not the best teacher in the world. I may be one of the most passionate, but every day around the world, I meet teachers in thatched huts, in earthen floors, in conflict zones, in war zones. Those are real heroes, teachers who are wading through the jungle and dealing with all kinds of Herculean challenges. Now, do I have Herculean challenges in the Bronx? For sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always important to keep things in perspective.
In perspective, absolutely. That's a fantastic point. On this question of attention, has it changed you? What have you learned from it?
Well, I've learned that ordinary people are capable of extraordinary things. And like I tell my kids, we are Americans, Mexicans, Dominicans, African Americans. And this is our moment. every day your feet hit the ground, you have the potential to do something great. And that's a beautiful thing.
So you saw a tremendous problem, and you turned it into an incredible opportunity. So I'm thinking of the person who's listening to us, and you were describing people who are in situations much worse than you and me. I'm thinking of those people who work in conditions similar to yours or even maybe worse. How can that person listening to us right now take a problem and turn it into an opportunity? How do you make something wrong right?
Well, I always believe this. First of all, I am never right. I'm committed to getting it right. So I'm on this constant, very recursive cycle of self-improvement and self-assessment. So I'm always looking at what's the next step? You know, how can I move myself, my students, and my community into the zone of proximal development? You know, the next logical succession, if you will. So it's really about being very task analytical, top down and bottom up. Kind of what got me going was this Herculean willingness to do anything. And because people knew I was willing to do anything, I was going to do anything. But in some ways, that was counterintuitive to a larger message, because now I focus on things that are scalable, that are replicable, things that any person can do. And really, it's constantly doing a needs assessment, it's showing up, and it's a lot of the magic rules. Say please, thank you, have a nice day. One of my favorite things is thank you for correcting me. Come early, stay late, work hard. The golden rules really apply in life. And there are challenges everywhere, but I believe that challenges are opportunity dressed in work clothes.
So tell us about the Green Bronx Machine.
The Green Bronx Machine. Well, the Green Bronx Machine is an impact-driven, for-purpose organization with charitable status. It's my way of saying a 501c3, because simply put, I refuse to be defined by the words non or not. Neither my children nor I are nons or nots. We are, and we will, and we do. So we are an impact-driven, for-purpose organization with charitable status. But what we are dedicated to is moving those who are apart from to becoming a part of in ways that benefit 100% of society. It was as this movement, this organization was as locally born and locally grown as one could ever imagine. And it's just been a blessing. Now we are really focusing on, you know, the art and science of growing food aligned to Common Core and content area instruction. So we believe the art and science of growing healthy food will grow healthy student outcomes and healthy communities, because healthy students are at the heart of healthy schools, and healthy schools are at the heart of resilient communities, and everyone wants their community to be more resilient. So input equals output. And for me, I want my kids eating healthy, fresh food and having access to nutritionally dense food where they need it most and where they're least likely to have access to it. And in that paradigm, guess what? They're less dependent on food coming from a far other place, bathed in oil that is really not good for them or anybody else.
You answered so much there. I feel like I can just scrap some of these questions.
I mean, in a nutshell, I believe that we grow vegetables. That's what we, if you had to sum it up, we grow vegetables. But our vegetables grow students, children, schools, performance, democracy, and equality.
One of my favorite quotes of yours is, my favorite grown crop is organically grown citizens.
That's true. I mean, I like arugula and Asian eggplant, but what I really love is kids who are growing up healthy, graduating, and moving into spheres of success they never imagined. And that's very much, I mean, quite frankly, what the whole green schools movement is about.
Yeah.
You know, every child deserves a safe, healthy, nurturing environment, a place where they can dream and work and aspire to a better future. And by giving them critical inputs and teaching them about the relationship between them and their environment, we're going to make it a better environment for everybody. And most importantly, take care of Mother Earth, because sometimes we forget about that in the picture, in the scheme of things, and that's unfortunate. So keeping that, you know, on our radar is absolutely critical to the long-term success of this planet.
Absolutely. Green Bronx Machine, it's a startup, and you're a social entrepreneur. You're not the stereotypical startup founder. You're not the millennial in a sweatshirt, eating ramen, working on an app. But
no, I can't even work on my iPhone. I'm still struggling with that thing.
What are some lessons you've learned along the way in creating this organization?
It's funny because you very eloquently credit me as being a good speaker, but what I try and also do is be a good listener, is really understand where people are at and kind of get a gauge on consensus. How do you get people from opposing sides of the fence to a greater place together, to a win-win scenario? That, to me, is what it's all about. You know, it's kind of like this convergence of technology and sustainability and accessibility and equality. So while I'm very much about safe, and trust you me, I love the word safe. I want inclusive. I want equitable. And I want transformational. And I believe everybody wants that. And if not, then we need to have a deeper, more meaningful conversation so that you want that not only for yourself, but for other people.
And isn't being a good listener really part of being a good speaker?
For sure. For sure. But as I'm getting older, I honestly like to talk less and listen more.
You guys at the Green Bronx Machine, you pay living wages. You provide health benefits. How do you do it?
No, what we do, so let me clarify that. This is really probably, put your seatbelt on. We don't get paid. What we do is we partner with people who provide living wage and benefits. So I am a completely volunteer organization. I take no salary. You know, my wife takes no salary. My students who have come through the program give back by paying it forward, because it's not about giving it back. It's about paying it forward and providing opportunities for the next generation of younger students. And that's a critical piece, because I started this program with overage, undercredited students. And now my focus is really elementary school, you know, starting them instead of undoing bad habits, so to speak, building, you know, the best habits I can at the youngest possible age in elementary school. And remarkably, the newest wrinkle to our program is we have an adult child workforce development, because I'm part of the community schools movement. So what we're doing is partnering children, elementary school children, with their parents, many of whom are underemployed or unemployed or on public assistance, to moving them to living wage jobs. So the kids actually get to see their parents being trained for work, and the kids are being trained side by side after school around healthy initiatives that benefit both their bodies, their communities, and Mother Earth. So it's really rather a remarkable approach. I was so honored last year that the Center for Green Schools and you as Green Building Council, you know, awarded us a Best of Green Schools program. And imagine, in a 100-plus-year-old building in the middle of the housing projects, to be net positive on food and energy. So specifically, we look to partner with like-minded businesses for a greater global good. You know, we're growing the next generation of employees and customers, and that's critical. So some people say that we are an oasis. But my goal is to build a rainforest of hyper-connected, you know, hyper-local, highly interdependent relationships that really foster an entire ecosystem.
You know, I just want to take a moment to reflect on one. You said a lot there, but I just want people to reflect on the fact that you, the chief eternal optimist, CEO of Green Bronx Machine, and the team are all volunteers. You're not getting paid for this. This is a globally known company. It's a globally known mission, and you are choosing to really focus on paying it all forward. And I just think that really speaks to your character, and it speaks to the values and character of the organization.
Well, thanks for that. I think we are, you know, going through some growing pains, so we are going to need some employees. And the coolest thing is many of the young people who started with me are now finishing college, now have skills that I can use to help grow this organization. And we are looking at expansion. Once we finish with the National Health Wellness Center, we're really going to take a deep dive and look at some staffing issues and really move this forward. But I don't want to be the organization that is perpetually with its hand out saying, you know, support us, help us, you know, and then thank you for your donation. Would you consider donating again? No, we want to build something and making a living, breathing, self-sustaining entity. And also to do the work that I felt compelled to do within the context of the work that needed to be done, I needed to free myself up from obligations and a paycheck. And it meant walking away from, you know, a job, giving up some benefits and really putting a stake in the ground. And remarkably, and I've got to say, I'm very proud to say and very pleased to say the Department of Ed is really coming along, too. So, you know, I think they're seeing the value to this. So I may have by default created opportunity not only for myself, but for the next generations of Stephen Ritz, which is a wonderful thing because it's never been about me. It's always been about we.
That's awesome. So you walked away from your job at PS55?
No, I'm still at PS55. This was about 2 years ago when I left Hyde Leadership Charter School. You know, I gave up a full-time, you know, basically wonderful position. I missed the kids and I missed the school.
You were dean, right?
Yeah, I was dean of students, exactly. I'm director of community partnerships. And instead saw an opportunity to do something and build out something that had never been done before. And sometimes to get that thing done and within the context of a system that's never done it before, you have to step out of that system and say, hey, I'm here as a volunteer. Let's work together. Trust me, and I will give you this in return. And it's been a great relationship. So I'm very thankful to my principal, Luis Torres, for having the vision and the courage to say yes. But the results have been phenomenal.
That's another thing I think that is so remarkable and exceptional about the kind of leadership that you possess. It's exactly what you just said. It's not about me, it's about we. And you do so much to celebrate the people that are helping make this movement happen.
Well, it's about one thing, people and power. So this is all about people, power. So when I say people, you say power. If you're listening, people, power. I could hear it echo. But realize this, PS55 was a traditionally very difficult school to staff. It's not accessible via public transportation. It's in a community that has a lot of challenges. You know, as you say, the grass is probably greener in many other communities. So for year after year, we struggled to staff the school.
Yeah.
But now with a program like this, this is the first year where we've had a wealth of people applying to work at the school. At one point, we had 400 applications coming through the door. So creating an aspirational place is going to transform the whole learning experience for everybody. And that's what it's about for me. It's about how to we recruit, respect, and retain quality teachers. And by creating a healthy, nurturing environment where people have a stake in it and literally can grow something greater within the four walls of that school with kids, that's going to transform public education. And we're seeing it happen.
So I'm asking this for all the hyper ambitious young people who feel like they need to be the 30 under 30 or the 40 under 40, you know, all those lists and ideals that define our standards of success. How old were you when you started Green Bronx Machine?
Old enough to know better, but young enough to believe it was possible. It was very funny. I'm laughing because I'm always so reluctant to give my age because some of the kids think I'm over 100. Some think I'm 21. You know, I tell the kids I went to school with Jesus and he was a great student then. And, you know, we need to be more like him now. So, you know, I'm in my 50s. I'm a product of the 60s. You know, and for me, what this really cuts down to is civil rights. This is about civil rights. This is about social activism. It's about social justice. It's about democracy. Yes, it's very much about food. It's very much about health. It's very much about the environment. But if you strand the issues that are facing the world out, it's really about education and the environment. And all of that is civil rights.
Wow. That's so powerful and so true. Also, I think just the lesson from what you did with Green Bronx Machine is that it's never too late.
You know, it's never too late. I'm very much a work in progress. There are things that I'm still aspiring to do and intending to do with the organization. But again, I just never woke up expecting to do this. I never woke up thinking I would be a farmer. And I'm still not a farmer. I'm just a people farmer. But, you know, for me, the kids are seeds. And what are seeds? Seeds represent genetic potential. And I want each and every one of my children to reach their God-given genetic potential in life. Zip code and skin color should not determine outcomes. Education should.
Yeah. Let's just talk about that for a second. You didn't start out hoping to be or planning to be a champion of sustainability. How did that happen?
I think it happens. For those who don't know, you know, my wife and I have endured several personal tragedies in our life. Things have not always been easy for us. But I think if you want to move forward, you don't spend a lot of time looking in the rearview mirror. The legacy of our son far exceeds, you know, his days on earth. And that for us is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Moving away from this notion that we need to own things to define ourselves is really critical. We don't own things. They own us. But together we can grow something greater.
And I'm glad you mentioned this because the awards, the TV promos, reading your bio and seeing that you've lost 100 pounds, which congratulations, it's just fantastic.
Thank you kindly. Yes, thank you.
you truly walk the talk. But life from the outside to people that don't know you might look pretty good. And can you talk to us about the pain that you've talked about that your wife and daughter have been through?
without getting too personal, yeah. You know, my wife and I went from twins to one to losing our son after birth. I've actually buried quite a few students of mine. And a lot of that has to do with environmental constraints and health issues and just, you know, random tragedy that could be avoided through more proactive care in our own community by having a better network of caregivers, you know, moving to self-care instead of healthcare. So when you start burying children and seeing generations of poverty, you really want to make a difference because you know you can.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, because I can relate in some ways, because my brother, not too long ago in October 2012, passed away suddenly in a tragic accident in college. My mom's a single parent, and I just know firsthand how difficult that is. So I commend you for taking this pain and making it your purpose. It reminds me, you know, of a quote by Malcolm X, and he says, "There is no better than adversity. Every defeat, every heartbreak, every loss contains its own seed, its own lesson on how to improve your performance the next time." And I think you really exemplify that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And again, my sympathies to you. It's tough, but I do believe that doesn't kill us can and will and should and must make us stronger. That's the life lesson. You know, it's real easy to be disabled, but I'm not a dis, I'm an enable. You know, I want to be the power of example. I want to turn that frown upside down, so to speak. The point is, you know, at any given moment, such random things, and in your case, my case, you know, these random tragedies, these sudden unexpected tragedies are proof that you need to get out there every day and seize the moment. That's what this is really about, seizing the moment.
Life is too short and too precious.
Absolutely. Exactly. So I'll sleep after. That's my point. I'll sleep, but not anytime soon.
Right.
Although I am addressing my own personal sustainability plan. So I need to put that out there. So any listener who knows me, please hold me accountable when you see me.
Well, what does that mean?
I've got to start taking better care of myself a little bit. It's one thing to lose the weight and change your eating habits. But, you know, if you give up a couple of thousand calories a day by just dropping soda and, you know, and bread and fast food, you're going to lose weight. But now it's a whole different paradigm of, you know, making sure my body's in balance, my mind is in balance, you know, I'm exercising, I'm drinking water, you know, I'm doing other things for my own personal sustainability that are critical.
I think that's such an important point, because all of us that either work in sustainability or are fans of it, we do a lot and we kind of lose sight of our daily balance and sustainability. And just the fact that you're aware of that, I think, is so important.
Well, the kids have been telling me, everyone's been telling me. So, you know, again, I can speak and speak and speak and get a standing ovation, or I can listen and then continue to speak better and get more standing ovations. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about.
Just taking your history, your story into consideration, what advice do you have for people who want to, quote unquote, change the world, but don't know how?
Start small.
Yeah.
Pick one thing and keep it small. Keep it replicable. I mean, part of my learning is that I probably dallied for a long time doing things that I thought if I put more and more energy into would have a greater effect, instead of really looking at how to make it replicable and scalable for other people. So start small. Concentric circles of success. Exclusivity breeds market share. You know, and that's the one thing I will say and say again, exclusivity breeds market share. And I didn't always go that route, but I have certainly learned that route. So making sure that you can manage what you're doing is critical. And, you know, and take time to smell the flowers, celebrate often, say please, thank you, have a nice day along the way. Give credit to everybody else. I do think asking for permission is begging for denial. So get out there and do it and give credit to everybody else along the way. Take baby steps, but just do it and be determined to do it. Just do it.
You mentioned how it's really important to take time to smell the flowers, to smell the roses. How do you do that? How do you personally do that?
Me, I celebrate with my kids. I love celebrating with my kids. Whether it's a lunch and learn or a simple celebration or a simple acknowledgement, saying please, saying thank you, giving kudos to those, it's critical. you know, for so long, public education has been about the carrot and the stick. And sadly, there was a lot more stick in public education than there was a carrot. Now we're growing our own, and that's kind of cool.
Right. So I just want to kind of shift gears a little bit and talk about the daily grind. It's easy, I think, when we're having this kind of conversation, when we're watching your TED Talk, or just in a moment of joy and bliss to be motivated. But, you know, then you turn on the news and then you just realize what's happening around the world. And there's so much that is flying in the face of that. How do you stay motivated in the face of so much blight and darkness?
The blight is what motivates me, because it can be all encompassing. So you've got to get up early to see the sunshine, you know, and then you also want to stay up late to see the moon glow. Mm. So I'm blessed, you know, I'm an early riser and I'm late to bed because I like seeing everything and I want to make sure my bases are covered. But the most important thing is to be prepared, have a contingency. Every day I make a list of things that I want to get done, particularly in school. And then sadly, life happens, you know, and life in certain communities and marginalized communities has a way of happening in ways you've never imagined, whether it's child abuse, child neglect, building issues. You know, I'm in a 100-plus-year-old building. You can't imagine the facility issues that we have. So you come to work with best intentions and things don't work and the pipes go out and the electric goes out. You know, we have big issues. And more importantly, we have real children issues: death, illness, homelessness, abuse, neglect, substance abuse, fires. So be prepared, be flexible, but know your outcome. You know, design with the end in mind. You know what your end game is and be determined to get there, but realize, you know, lots of things are going to happen in the way that may prevent you or may circumvent you or may, you know, hyperlink you to it. So be prepared, be flexible.
You know, one thing I've kind of noticed or observed about you is that you kind of enjoy the hustle. Or do you enjoy the hustle?
Yes and no. I enjoy the result more than the hustle. I wish the process was easier, yeah. But if it was easier, it wouldn't be so transformational. And then, you know, the benefit of it not being easy is you get the luxury of really seeing the success stand out. But, you know, the hustle and the hassle, I don't wish some of the pain and the angst that I've been through on anybody.
Right.
And I hope no one has to go through some of the challenges. And, you know, largely due to organizations like the Center for Green School and the U.S. Green Building Council and the Green Schools National Network, you know, people like me 10, 20 years ago, people thought were crazy, really, we had our eyes on the future. We were really determined to get it right. So I'm glad if through my trials and tribulations, I'm making it easier for the next generation of sustainability natives to get their foot through the door and have a greater global good. That's wonderful. And that's something I enjoy. But at times, no, I did not enjoy having fingers pointed at me and my family and people thinking, you know, the high poppy syndrome can really suck. It's painful. At times it was
really...
What is
that? Sorry, I don't even know what that is.
The hype, you know, when you're really creating, when you're that flower that stands up or that plant that stands up amongst the rest of the field, you know, you tend to get clipped first.
Yeah.
You tend to take a lot of abuse.
Yeah.
So make no doubt about it. In my career, I've taken some hits and abuse that probably weren't warranted. Maybe some were, but certainly some weren't. I mean, demanding that, you know, we create better environments, demanding that we look at facilities, demanding a certain amount of transparency in what we do. People didn't like that. Mm. A lot of people were very content with the status quo.
Right.
I'm not into incremental change. Yeah, I want to see small changes for sure, but I want to see systems change. I want to put an end to poverty and hunger in my lifetime. I mean, it can't happen soon enough for me. There's a sense of urgency to what I want to do.
On this topic of hustle, can you hustle and be happy at the same time?
I guess if I'm hustling, and hustling means seeing smiling, happy, well-adjusted kids, teachers who are showing up to work in the South Bronx from places that we never imagined and saying please, thank you, and being excited to be there and engaging with my children and engaging in my community, then the hustle is 100% worth it. Mm-hmm. When I'm sending kids home with bags of groceries and bags of vegetables and kids are losing weight and feeling great and can tell me more about plants than, quite frankly, I'm interested in, that's a wonderful thing.
I think everything is based around your story, the story you tell yourself. And most people are stuck because of the story they've told themselves, or they're telling themselves an old story. What's the story you tell yourself?
From impossible to I'm possible. All it requires is one apostrophe and a little punctuation shift.
I think that's going to be a new affirmation, from impossible to I'm possible.
Right. The same thing. Opportunity is nowhere. No, opportunity is now here. Just move. Just separate the W and the H and you're good to go. Sometimes it's that simple.
Yeah. There's so much going on. And in your world, there's just a lot. Honestly, I don't know how you deal with it. So how do you prevent overwhelm? How do you stay on top of what you want to get done? What advice do you have?
I'm probably not the best guy to ask that question to. So I think, you know, in this day and age, certainly, you know, you got to separate the noise from the signal. And that's I'm not always the best at that, because I like to honor every voice. And I mean that sincerely. I like to answer every email I get. Wow. I like to read every email I get.
How many emails do you get?
In excess of 1,000 a day.
1,000 a day, time, and you're answering all of those.
I try to. I honestly try to, but it's getting to the point where I can't.
Yeah.
So I am constantly searching within myself for a more effective way, because I don't want someone else to read my email. I feel if you write to me, I should be able to write to you back.
Hmm.
And so figuring out things like that have become critical. I mean, there's probably an application for that. The big joke for me is if there's an app for that, I desperately need it. You know, I'm still terribly mourn moving past my BlackBerry. I loved my BlackBerry only because I could look you in the eye and text you War and Peace with the QWERTY keyboard. I still haven't mastered, the touch keyboard with my stumbling fingers. Basically, my advice would be find tools that work. Find tools for you that work. And if you really want to be a change maker and have people who are listening, you have them kind of learn your system. So I'm very blessed to work with people who understand my system. Some of them happen to be your colleagues. And there are people I work with that really understand how I work, and being vocal about it really, you know, I'm very recursive in my thinking. So I'll always ask if I'm hearing you correctly, if I'm understanding you correctly, you know, clarify your thinking, get common ground, constantly get common ground with those who work closest and nearest and dearest to you so that you're always on the same page.
Fantastic advice. One thing that you are crystal clear about, at least it seems to me, is your calling and your purpose. How did you find that?
By listening. I mean, the interesting thing is, I'll tell you where I'd like to go, which is really, you know, with all of this, the next big hurdle I'd like to take on is foster care.
Wow.
That's something that is very much near and dear to me, foster care, and this whole notion of children who are being raised by a system instead of being raised by people, or kind, caring adults, because my goal is to be that kind, caring, consistent adult in every child who I meet's life. That's what I really have eyes on. Children don't ask to be born, so we have an obligation to take care of those who are.
So your advice for people who want to find their calling, their purpose, reach their highest potential, is to listen to life.
Listen to life. Life sends you signals. Life sends you signals. It doesn't call collect, but it sends you. Well, sometimes it does. Sometimes it does. But listen to the signals. Look around and, you know, and embrace your true self. You know, do what matters to you. Now, the important thing to realize, too, is I'm a big believer in self-directed learning. But, you know, having autonomy is not freedom to do what the hell you want. It's freedom to get it done right, to do what you're paid to do. So if you're going to take a job, make sure you're meeting the mandates of your job within the context of what you want to do and within the content of what you feel compelled to do. Or be bold and take a big leap like I did. But, you know, along the way, I get a lot of credit, but let me really make sure that my wife and my daughter and my students and my colleagues get, you know, equal, if not more, credit.
Hmm.
Because while I'm very much, I guess, the mouth and the face of the organization and probably the buttocks at times, you know, there are arms and legs and those belong to other people. So while Lizette is my wife, I am very much her husband, and she deserves a lot of credit. And my daughter, Michaela, and my students and my principal, there are so many people I stand on. My parents, I stand on the shoulder of giants. So it's not as though I emerged out from under a rock. A lot of people have been very vested and vetted in helping me succeed, and I need to acknowledge them daily. And of course, my kids, my students, you know, I mean, they love me and I love them. It's a good relationship.
Thank you for mentioning that, because I think too often we focus on that hero entrepreneur, hero social entrepreneur, or just someone who represents quote-unquote success. Actually, this is, I feel, a universal truth. All of us have been raised by many people. I know personally, you know, I wouldn't be who I am if it wasn't for my mom and my grandma. And I honor that, and I'm proud of it.
As you should be.
Yeah, as I
should. As we all should be. And congratulations on grandma's birthday. That's wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, she's turning 90. But yeah, I just think it's so important that we all kind of take a moment to not only honor like the people who are the face of something, but all the people who've made that face possible.
As well as the organizations that takes tough stands.
Yeah.
It's one thing, you know, to be the lone voice in the crowd. It's another thing to be in a party with a group of friends. But when organizations get out there and take tough stands and fight the fight, that's critical. So I stand on the shoulder of giants. You know, you're part of an organization that I hold near and dear because they are taking on big interests, you know, and really speaking about where we learn matters for the right reasons. You know, it's about leadership, I always say, L-E-A-D, but it's also about leadership, L-E-E-D, leadership. It's about, you know, return on investment and really understanding that, you know, we are part of systems.
Personally, I get what you're talking about, but there's going to be a lot of people who are listening who don't even know what U.S. Green Building Council is. What are some of the things they're doing to take on big interest?
Well, understanding the relationship between human beings and the built environment, that, you know, buildings are living, breathing things too, and that they impact performance is critical. You know, it's not, it no longer makes sense to get something up as cheaply and as quickly as possible, because where we learn matters, where we live matters, building life matters. Building functionality matters. I mean, for me, it was horrible when I was at Hyde to have to teach kids in classrooms that had no windows. And that was the reality of my school. So how could I bring bright, shining light in? Well, it was through plants. It was through plants and water. You know, so fighting big interests for understanding that, you know, we need better policy is critical.
Yeah.
Is absolutely critical. So policy counts. Policy, leadership and leadership matters to me.
Fantastic.
You know, taking the time to make an investment, sometimes that big investment that people don't want to make is the best investment you could ever make.
Hmm. Lots of quotable moments today. You did mention something before that I wanted to touch on. You said that you were talking about kind of navigating this world where maybe you have a job, but you also have this idea and you really want to see this idea flourish. You want to see it thrive. And you're kind of in this position where you may have benefits, you may have a steady paycheck. When do you make the decision to make the shift and go in full time into your passion?
I think the sooner you make the shift for the right reasons, the happier you're going to be.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make the shift, do it. Be prepared. What Edison say? He didn't have 1,000 failures. He had 1,000 reasons to get closer to the right way to do this thing. That's what it's really about for me. But, you know, be smart in what you do. Don't cut your nose to spite your face. But if you are charged with a greater good, you've got to go out there and embrace it. Or you're going to forever second guess yourself.
Mm.
You know, don't be afraid to fail. Failure is the most critical learning tool in the world. You know, you pick yourself up, you dust yourself off, and you're a little smarter than you were the day before because you knew the thing you did yesterday didn't quite work well enough to get you to today.
I really love the advice there to be smart about it, because maybe not everyone, you know, can quit their job and forego health benefits because they might have a terminal illness or they may need that paycheck to make ends meet. There might be ways for them to lean into what they want to do, right?
Exactly. You know, be smart, be strategic, and don't operate in isolation. The one thing that you'll hear me say is this is never about me. It is always about we. It is about a greater good, whether it's my family, my students, my colleagues, my principal, my community. So I made a lot of decisions with consensus. And, you know, the other thing is, if you're working with people you love and you trust, you can be honest.
Yeah.
And you never know what can happen. So by being honest and transparent in your work relationships, you're going to get to a better place both at work and in your personal life. And that's critical.
What's the lesson that's taken you the longest to learn?
Besides my iPhone? the iPhone has really been killing me. I'm not bad with the Mac, but my iPhone has been killing me. Still, you know, patience. I want everything done yesterday and it can't happen. I'm getting better about it. But on one hand, you know, it's funny because I say I wish I was a little more patient. But on the other hand, I'm really glad I'm not, because it still makes me get up extra early and stay up extra late and fight extra harder. And that's the only way things are going to get done.
Hmm. What's the best advice you've ever received?
Listen, just really listen. Listen, you know, how do you get to done? You know, look at what's the next step of proximal development? There are a lot of leaders. And again, I've been blessed to work with so many wonderful, supportive people. And sadly, I don't always get to speak to them in person all the time, but I have these great conversations with them. I say, what would this person do? What would Nancy Berlin do? What would Stan Zucker do? What would Pam McCarthy do? You know, real great leaders that I've had. My friend Bill Gladstone. What would Jeff Paladino? What would Jamie Cloud do? I've had some real great leaders along the way that encouraged me to think and encouraged me to listen. So I tend to sometimes step out of my own thinking and ask myself, what would they do? I have a lot of what I call unpaid mental health providers who I converse with. They're just not privy to it yet. I guess they're going to send me a big bill one day. That's okay. I'm paying them back by being competent.
I love that you mentioned the mentors in your life. I mean, you kind of mentioned it already, but what's the importance of having these mentors?
Just, you know, you need people to check in with. I think a lot of the work that we're all trying to do is somehow in some shape, manner, or form also being done effectively somewhere else in some shape, manner, or form by someone else. So by looking at people's paradigms for success and also being honest about the failures, you know, because like, why if someone knows this doesn't work, should I have to do the same thing and fail again? So really being honest about our failures is critical. Because that's the greatest, you know, the one thing that we have is a fixed amount of time, and sometimes not enough of that. So if I can avoid a time loss by learning from someone's mistakes, I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, no experience is wasted if you learn the lesson.
Right, exactly. So sharing, you know, everyone likes to wave the flag, you know, part of the new thing. It's funny, you talk about my old TED Talk. The talk that I'm probably most proud of is the newer one, because it's a lot less flag waving and a lot more talking about where I want to go. I'm holding myself accountable. So if I don't accomplish that, I'm really going to be upset. It's great to get out there and say, yeah, I did this and this is wonderful. And yeah, I did that and that's wonderful. But really putting yourself out there and saying, this is what I want people to hold me accountable to going forward is probably the most critical thing I can do.
Can you briefly touch on what's going on right now with the library initiative?
Oh, the National Health, Wellness, and Learning Center. You know, who knew the city, who in the city included, that some guy would want to show up on the fourth floor and, you know, and grow a farm? So I think, you know, it took some time for them to wrap themselves around it. New thinking sometimes takes a while to get used to. And I have to realize that I am one of many change makers that the city is trying to accommodate. So while things don't happen fast enough, I keep trying to find ways to make them happen faster. And that's good. I'm learning to navigate the system. I'm learning to navigate the process.
How can people help?
Well, we have a fundraiser. We have a GoFundMe. If everybody who hears my voice could donate just $5, that would make a huge difference. We're going to be launching a merchandise page, a sustainable merchandise page with locally sourced materials and stuff that the kids generate, which is really exciting.
Oh, like what?
T-shirts, hats, aprons, bow ties, all kinds of good stuff.
I want a bow tie.
I will gladly make you a bow tie. I'll make it for you personally, and I would love to put it on you personally. But, you know, so with the kids, and that's a beautiful thing. Everybody could use a little bow tie in their life. You know, the kids, when the kids come to school in a bow tie, you know, their pants stay up a little higher, they walk a little taller, they feel a little better. And I meet every single child, hello, handsome, in the morning, you know, hello, handsome. And that's a nice thing. It's nice to be handsome. It's nice to look stylish. And it's nice to celebrate something that is upsourced and recycled and readily available, instead of something that is commercially marketed to us from a far off place where the money leaves our community and doesn't stay there.
Right.
We're a little fashionistas. We're a little fashionistas in the South Bronx. So we have a GoFundMe campaign, little things, you know, like the kids on Facebook. The kids are really dedicated about running their Facebook page. So like the kids on Facebook, like them or follow them on Instagram. This is a movement that was started on nothing more than, I like to say, sheer testicular fortitude. So it's not, we don't need millions of dollars. We just need a couple of $5 bills here and there, and let the kids know that, you know, we're looking for social media people. Down the line, I am going to be seeking some interns to really help me grow this. But right now, the principal thing is making the site operational.
Yeah.
And for me to tweak it, you know, we're going to have 25 periods of classroom instruction in there a week, plus an after-school workforce development program. And that's a beautiful thing. I'm constantly seeking seeds. So if you are a seed saver or a seed giver, we always need seeds in the South Bronx. In fact, for Halloween, we're giving out seed packets so kids can go home and grow something at home. Instead of candy and something commercial, we want to change the narrative. And
that's such a cool idea.
Yeah, we're giving out seed packets, you know, whether they're flowers or seeds or plants or herbs. We're sending kids home with something alive and living for Halloween. But I jokingly and not so jokingly say that my kids love seeing other kinds of people connect. For many of my kids, they didn't know the world was so full of white people or other colored people until I started getting them out and bringing them in. So it's really cool that when my kids meet people from around the world and send just some kind, encouraging words to them on Facebook, and that really does a lot, you know, even small things like letter writing campaigns. Last year, I was able to connect every single kid with good attendance with a corporate person who sent them a card congratulating them on their good attendance. And they couldn't believe it because most of my kids have never gotten a piece of snail mail. I'm going to try and address the digital divide this year.
Yeah.
So if people have laptops and computers and old devices that they don't need, don't throw them away. Please send them to me. You know, the digital divide really exists exponentially in communities like mine. So computers and stuff that you may not want, even old cameras, they're really good for having kids document and write stories and taking pictures and being investigative reporters. So the things, you know, the tools, I know every year in the United States, we throw away enough cell phones to fill up all of Yankee Stadium.
Mm.
Imagine if some of those phones came to me and my kids or some of those cameras or, you know, would really be awesome. Let's give products and things a new life. Let's reuse, recycle, and resource ourselves into a whole new economy and a paradigm of success. So those are some of the things that I really love people to do. Reach out to me if you have. I say reach out to me because I love connecting with people and connecting dots. If people want to do service and do internship or want to do some student teaching, we welcome that. We have beautiful gardens to take care of at this school, which is amazing. So if you want to come down and work in an urban garden and you're really committed, we'd love to have you.
What's the best way people can connect?
Stephen.Ritz@greenbronxmachine.org. I do read all of it, but I don't read it all as quickly as I read everything that comes into my DOE.
I can't believe you just gave your email to everyone that's listening.
Well, why not? I mean, you know, it's not top secret. People find me. You know, people are resourceful. Hey, we know Rick Paso. He cracked Twitter, and he's not even a Kardashian.
Si se puede. That's your slogan.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can. Is that in memory of legendary civil rights activist Cesar Chavez?
Well, it's interesting because I honestly, and this was my teachable moment, I did not know much about Cesar Chavez growing up. But I always heard si se puede in my neighborhood. I mean, you know, when the president was elected, our president, he campaigned on the si se puede. I saw lots of pictures with him saying si se puede, my kids and I. It's just something we always grew up saying. Again, I stand on a shoulder of a giant. If I knew that it emanated from Cesar Chavez, I might not have gravitated so quickly to use it because he's such a powerful, meaningful figure in life. But now it just seems we are known as the Si Se Puede crew. And that's, I think, we're paying wonderful homage to a gentleman who was really a trailblazer for a community that looks a lot like mine and is increasingly looking a lot like his.
Yep. If anyone doesn't know who Cesar Chavez is, look him up. And I think you all are doing him really great honor.
Well, I appreciate that. And ever since I learned, I certainly take it far more seriously. And that's, you know, that's part and parcel of what we do.
Yeah.
We grow. So join us. Work with us. You know, it's about sticking your hand out and saying, please, thank you, have a nice day, and growing something greater. So plant a seed, make a simple change, join the mission, and do something great.
This has been such an honor. When we started this show, our hope was that I'd be able to talk to people like you who come from ordinary, humble beginnings and are making an extraordinary difference. So thanks for your time.
My pleasure. I can't wait to do it again. So you have a wonderful day. Get out there and do something great today and every day.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Changemakers at USGBC. We created this show to go beyond the buildings and spotlight ordinary individuals making an extraordinary difference. Now, we want to hear from you. What was your favorite part of today's episode? We'd love to know what you think. Thanks for listening.